Good morning. Today's Daf Baba Basra is Lamed Gimel. We are starting today. We're in the middle of the Amud with the Hawa Rava. We're going to be talking about a guarantor. In the course of the third parak of Baba Basra, our topic has been pretty consistently Cheskes Gimel Shanim, where if you occupy a property for 3 years and it's gone unchallenged and you have a taina and you have a very rational explanation in terms of how you got the land, how you became the owner of the land, so under those circumstances you then become the de facto owner. The Rashbam has said consistently throughout the parak a number of times, he's going to say it again in today's daf as well, that the basically what the Chachamim did is that once you occupy a land for 3 years and it's gone unchallenged, it's come on, it's like you have a shtar that you're holding in your hand. Like the Gemara said in the very beginning of the sugya, all the way back on Chavtes, the general assumption behind Kenyan Chazak Cheskes Gimel Shanim is in consideration of the fact that you're not expected to hold the shtar for more than 3 years. You have documentation, but how long are you supposed to be holding on to it? People generally don't hold on to it for more than 3 years, so after 3 years, you're not expected to hold the document anymore. So Cheskes Gimel Shanim is as if it's ki'ilu, you're holding the shtar in your hand, and therefore you are a documented owner of the land. In the course of discussion, the Gemara has brought in many, many case studies. Most of them having to do with Cheskes Gimel Shanim. Some of them not having to do with Cheskes Gimel Shanim. You remember that yesterday we had a case that started on the very bottom, Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, where a person said to his friend, "What are you doing over here?" And his response was, "What do you mean? I'm the owner," and he's holding a shtar in his hand. And the counterclaim went, "What do you mean, shtar? That's a forged document. Get out of here with that." So he leans over to Rabba and he whispers to Rabba, "You know, Rabba, I'm going to be honest with you. He's right. It's a forged document. I'm not going to lie." But, you know, as he approaches the bench and he speaks to Rabba, but he says, "But I'll tell you this, though. In other words, I really did buy it from him, and he really did write me up a document, and I really did have a document, but I lost it. And I'm admitting it. I'm openly admitting it." Well, not openly. He's whispering to Rabba. He says, "But I'm telling you, I lost it. And I knew I couldn't come into court empty-handed. I know that'd be ridiculous. I haven't been here for 3 years, and so therefore, you know, what's my real right to the land right now? So obviously some form of documentation, so I figure I'll just come in with his document." If you remember yesterday, the Rashbam said that the document that he actually came in with was another sale document. It happened to have been a shtar mana. It was a sale document where you write it up before the sale, you sign it before the sale. I mean, we're going to talk later in the Masech that you shouldn't be writing up such documents, meaning it's not prudent to do so, and it's also disingenuous, meaning it's not true. Okay, and we'll talk about that later on. But anyway, the Rashbam says it's talking, the shtar is some sort of shtar mana. Anyway, so he tells Rabba, "But look, let's be honest, I did have a shtar. I lost it, and this is, you know, I kind of came in over here, basically, you know, like to call his bluff, because I knew I was right." So to which Rabba said, "Well, you know, he could have had a really good argument. He could have said that he could have thundered through and said that the shtar is really a legitimate shtar. He could have said that. And since he could have said that, so therefore we're going to believe him based on the principle of migu." To which Rav Yosef, yesterday's daf, said, that's crazy. Because the shtar is a shtar chaspa, and we don't say that. In other words, if the whole foundation of his argument is based on a document which is admittedly not a correct document, it's a forged document, or it's a worthless document, let's put it that way, so then you can't build a migu on top of that. Okay, so, and that was a machlokes between Rabban and Rav Yosef in terms of what to do with that case. We had a similar case yesterday, which basically same structure, where a guy said that he was owed money. The only difference between the case that we just went over and the next case is the question of land versus money. So in the second case, it was money, and again, went to court, said the guy owes me money, and the guy in the counterclaim was, "Well, again, money, no money, whether I owe you or not, what you're coming into court with is a forged document. Get out of here with a forged document." So again, the guy turns to Rabba and says, "Look, again, let's be honest with each other. It is a forged document. I know it is, but he really did owe me the money. I really did have a document. I lost it." Same basic story. So, and again, the Gemara brought down the same machlokes between Rabbi and Rav Yosef. Rabbi said, well, he could have thundered through and said that the document was good, and he didn't do that, and so therefore he has a credibility based on the principle of Migu. And Rav Yosef says, no, you can't build a Migu on top of a document which, to begin with, is a forged document. Fine. And then what the Gemara said after all that is, where are we going to go in terms of the halacha? So, Rav Edi Bar Avin said that in the case of land, we're going to go with the occupier, meaning we're gonna follow him. And in the case of money, we're gonna go with the guy who's holding money. Or, as the Rashbam pointed out at the end of yesterday's daf, basically we're gonna go with whoever's holding. Whoever the holder is, meaning hamotzi mechaver al avera, you're trying to extract money from somebody, you're trying to extract property from somebody. So hamotzi mechaver al avera. So in the case of the land, look, we don't know. Meaning, and when I say we don't know, meaning we do know it's a machlok chin rabban Rav Yosef, and we don't know who the halacha follows like. So under these circumstances, so who's right now holding the land? And remember the end of yesterday's daf, I got a little bit confused because the Gemara kind of shifted and it was a subtle shift, and at the end of yesterday's daf I kind of missed that shift. Meaning, because the assumption going into the discussion was, well, he doesn't have Cheskes Gemel Shanim, he doesn't have a shtar, so he's not the holder. But what the Gemara did subtly yesterday, and I almost missed it, is that the Gemara said, well, look, we don't know. And right now he's occupying the land, so therefore he's the holder. And therefore, Rav Edi Bar Avin says, in the case of land, we're going to go with the one who's currently occupying it, since we don't know what the halacha is under those circumstances. In the case of money, well, we're going to go with who's holding. Who's holding the money right now? The lova, the borrower. And again, I'm only calling him the borrower because those were the original claims. But again, we don't know if he's a borrower because what the Malva came after him with is a forged document. And again, Machlok Shurab and Rav Yosef, in terms of who do we believe, we don't know who to believe. Therefore, you're trying to extract money from somebody. Motzi mechavero ala varaya. Okay, and that's where we ended yesterday, and a good summary of yesterday's daf and a good segue into today's daf. Well, still yesterday's daf, but Lamed Beis, right in the middle of the Amud. Ha'u arva da'amar le'love. So a guarantor said the following to the borrower. So this is an interesting debate. Interesting dialogue over here, where basically somebody borrowed money and somebody co-signed. Okay. So, and so the guarantor now says to the borrower, look, I was nice enough to guarantee the loan, and I'm going to be more honest with you. Not only was I nice enough to guarantee the loan, but some of the loan came due, and I paid some of it. Havli mezuzah depart to lamalve. Now, I paid 100 zuz to the malve, and therefore, he was demanding. You were not able to pay. I co-signed, so therefore I paid 100 zuz, and I'm coming now after you for that 100 zuz. At the end of the Masechta, right, months from now, so we're going to be talking a lot about Arev, about this concept of a guarantor. So the truth of the matter is that right now, our discussion over here is relevant to what we just went over a moment ago. The discussion of guarantor is something which the Gemara later on is going to be discussing in much greater detail. So, but anyway, so the guarantor now is coming after the borrower and saying, look, I laid out the money because I co-signed, but now you're going to pay me back. So let me do that again. So the guarantor said to the borrower, "Havli me'azuz deparach lamava ilavech v'hashtara." So, and I paid the 100, and oh, by the way, here's the shtar, meaning he was holding up the document. So amale la peraticha. So to which the borrower said back to the guarantor, "What are you talking about? I paid you back already." So, yes, I'm in agreement with everything that just happened. You guaranteed the loan. You paid my lender. You came after me demanding me the money. But here's where we depart in terms of the story. And I paid you back, said the borrower to the guarantor. So, Amar lava dat shakina minai, to which now the guarantor said back to the borrower, okay, that part's true. But then you asked me for the money back, and I gave you the money back. Okay, now I know there's a lot of moving parts to the story, but basically, to make it really simple, there are only two people who are litigating with one another, the guarantor and the borrower. And basically, what's at issue over here is as follows. The guarantor says to the borrower, you owe me money. The borrower says, you're right, and I paid you the money. And the guarantor said, you're right, but then I lent you the money back. Now, the only real issue over here is the following. Basically, in order for the guarantor to be able to rightfully collect his money, so he needed documentation. Now, he had it. because when he paid back the malveh, so he took the note from the malveh, which means now that he's entitled to the money. But once the borrower paid back the guarantor, so what does that do in terms of the documentation? It basically discharges the documentation. Meaning, once you pay back the loan, the document now has lost its power. Now, you want to borrow again? It's a milveh al peh. That's an oral loan. What you can't do is you cannot recycle a document. A shtar, once it's used, so that's it. Its power is gone. From that point going forward now, it is just simply a piece of paper with no legal force behind it whatsoever. And so therefore, what basically is that the core of this discussion over here is that when the guarantor went after the borrower to say, you owe me the money, so now the guarantor is basically admitting, yeah, the paper that I'm holding up right now has no value. So it's similar, right? And you gotta just struggle a little bit, but it's similar to the previous discussion where the guy came into the court with a forged document. Now, admittedly, this is not a forged document, so it's not as egregious as the previous case, but it is similar because he's coming in with a document that really has no legal force whatsoever. And with that in mind, so now we'll understand the continuation of the Gemara. Shach Rav Idi Bar Avin Lekamida Abaye Ki Agav Namai. So Rav Idi Bar Avin, who ironically was the one who ruled in the previous case, sent a letter to Abaye and asked this Abaye, I don't know what to do over here, meaning should the guarantor in fact collect his money based on this document, which has no legal power whatsoever. So Shach Le Abaye Maiti Bayele. So Abaye says back to Rav Idi Bar Avin, it's weird that you're asking me that question. Ha Ihu De Amar, it is he who said, he meaning Rav Idi Bar Avin, it is he who said, Hilchza Kavase De Rav Abara, Hilchza Kavase De Rav Yosef Bezuze. You're the very same person who in the previous case, when the guy came into court with a forged document, you said, look, there's the opinion of Rabba, there's the opinion of Rav Yosef. I don't know who to go with. Since I don't know who to go with, I'm also mechaver al avraya. So the one holding the money is going to be the one who gets to keep the money. Here, too, it should effectively be the same thing. Look, the guarantor goes over to the lover. Guarantor says, you owe me the money. The lover says, I paid you already. Guarantor says, I know, but then I lend you money back again. So to which the borrower says to the lender, or in this case the guarantor, look, I know you lend me the money again, but we didn't write up a new document, and you can't use the old document to come at me. And now, what do we do under these circumstances? So basically what the Gemara is saying is that according to Rav Idi Bar Avin, you know what we should do? The same thing you said in the previous case. So the hechaduk mezuzah lukme. Wherever the money is, that's where the money should stay. Being that what the guarantor was coming after him with is a document that may in fact not be a valid document. Okay.
But the lover admits.
The lov is admitting that he borrowed it, but what the malv is coming after him, and in this case the malv being the guarantor, what the malv is coming after him is with a document that does not have any legal force because it's a recycled document. Okay, so it's a milveh al peh. Okay, now vahani mila damale hadatu svesina minai. Now the Gemara says now all this discussion will work, meaning that the document will be a recycled document in the event where there's an admission that the loan was returned and then a new loan was issued. However, if the money was handed back as a result of the fact that either the money was getting rubbed out or the money was getting red, sumke means red, meaning that basically the money over here was just simply physically getting worn down. And so therefore it was just simply not currency. It was not going to be able to be used as currency. So akat isal shibud deshtara. So under those circumstances where the money was handed back, not because of payment of debt, not because of satisfaction of the debt, just simply because, hey, this money's no longer going to work. So, and that's the reason why the money was handed back. So under those circumstances, that is not considered a satisfaction of debt. And therefore, the document still has its shibud, has its legal power. And under those circumstances, then you can come after him with the shtar and demand the money with the shtar. Okay. Ad Kan. So basically, it takes us now to the end of yesterday's discussion, yesterday's daf. So where do we stand right now? So if you're coming after somebody and you're using a document which is not a valid document, so do you have a migu, yes or no? In other words, with the argument that you could make that, look, I know I'm coming at you with a document that's no good, but you could have said that it's a good document, and therefore you have a migu. So Rabbi says you do have a migu. Rav Yosef says you don't have a migu. Where do we stand in terms of the halacha? So Rav Idi Bar Avin says not once but twice over the course of Lamed Beis Lamed Beis that hamotz mechaveh olav araya, that basically when it comes to money, so the money is going to stay where the money is currently at, and in this case it's in the hand of the borrower. It gets to stay in the hand of the borrower. Okay. Next, four lines from the bottom on Lamed Beis Lamed Beis. Next case study. Rav Bar Shasham Nafak Alei Kala Dekaachel Aridiasme. A rumor started circulating regarding Rav Bar Sharsham that he was eating the fruit of the property of orphans. Okay, so rumors, allegations, news reports. And now he has to defend himself. So Amalei Abaye, Emily Easy, Gufa de Uvda Hechava. So Abaye basically calls him into his office and he says, tell me right now, Easy means right now. Tell me right now, Gufa de Uvda Hechava, I want details of the case. Meaning before we go any further, like let me see what is going on over here. And so now an explanation was given over to Abaye. Amalei Ara Bemashkenusa Hava Nikitna Meavon Diasme. So he says, the story starts like this. Dad, meaning obviously before they were orphans, so there was a father. And now Rav Bar Sharsham explains to Abaye, here's the starting point of this whole story. Dad borrowed money from me. And the way we worked it out is that I basically took a property to hold against the loan. And we discussed this extensively back in Bava Metzia. In the fifth parak of Bava Metzia, we addressed this question of whether or not you can take land as a mashkan against the loan. And basically, yeah. In other words, on a term basis, you could take land to secure against the loan. And furthermore, you can even take the fruit off the land with the assumption, with the understanding, of course, that what we're going to do is we're going to deduct the amount of fruit that you take off the loan value. And that is how the loan is going to get paid back. Okay, so this is basically what happened. So I took the land as a mashkon, right? It's called the mashkon asa desura. The Rashbam on the very bottom line explains. So I took the land as a way of securing the loan. Fine. V'haveli zuzi achrin agabe. But I'm going to tell you now even more details of the story. And this is not the only money that he borrowed from me. The truth of the matter is, he also borrowed other monies from me. Unsecured loan. No mashkon. So basically now there were two outstanding loans that he had, that I had against him, and now I wanted payment. But he died. So v'achalti shnei mashkenasa. And we got to the point now where the term of the secured loan came to an end, and now I had to give him back the land. I had to give the estate back the land because that loan now was due. However, what I said at that point in time is, I don't want to give back the land. Because I know that I also have an unsecured loan against him as well. He's no longer alive. And now I'm going to have to collect that unsecured loan from the children. We know, the Gemara is about to tell us, I'll read it inside in the Gemara. V'achal t'shnei mashkanata, Amina, I said, I mahadrina la ara liyasme, if I were to return the land back to the orphans, va'amina disle zuze achrina gabe, and if I would have just went with a straightforward approach of then saying to the estate, hey guys, or kids, your father owed me another loan, so we know what the halach is. The Gemara says it time and again. Gemara says it here as well. So, I'm sorry. Disle zuze achrina gabe davuchon, am rabbanon, we know that there is a rabbinic enactment, which is, abali par minichse yisomim, that if you are going to collect a loan from the estate and the right now the survivors of that estate, the children are children, lo yipar ela b'shvua. So you can only come and collect with an oath. And right now, we're not in a position where I can even collect it because right now the children are so young. So basically, we're in a position right now where if I were to just simply return the land because the term of the secured loan now is due and we're finished with the mashkon and I just return it and then I try to collect my other loan, I know it's not going to be collectible at this point in time. And even at a later point in time when I come and collect it, I'm only going to be able to collect it with a shvuah. So here was my strategy and here's what I did. And here's how all those rumors started circulating. Ella, Ach b'shel shtar mashkanata. So what I'm going to do right now is I have a shtar mashkon, meaning when you have a Syrian pledge, so that's written up in a document. So basically what I did is I just put it aside. Literally, I put it away. V'ochla shir zuzay. And what I then did is that I stayed on the land longer so that I would get satisfied my unsecured loan. And as far as my legal right to do so, well, look, here's what I could have said. I could have said, look, I've been on this land for some time now. I've been here, whatever. How, the Gemara doesn't tell us how long the pledge was. Just for argument's sake, let's say that it was pledged to him for 10 years. I've been on this land for a very long time. I could now simply have said, well, look, the land belongs to me. And since I could have said that, so what I could also say is that he owes me another loan, an unsecured loan, and therefore I'm just simply taking what is rightfully belongs to me, and in the method in which I'm doing right now, it obviates me from having to make a shvua because I really don't want to make a shvua. And also, at this juncture, they are too young. I can't even collect the debt. I'd have to wait till a longer period of time. So another advantage I get right now is I'm going to be able to collect the money now. All this based on a migu that I could have said, well, I bought the land. Okay. Take a look at the Rashbam. The long one, Amar Le. Okay, this is the Rashbam's now. This is the Rashbam explaining when Rava Bar Shasham is making his case to Abaye. Amar Le, Abaye, had the chashavta bada. I'm sorry. Let me first read the Gemara and then I'll go back to the Rashbam. Okay, let me go in the right order. So Amar Le Lekucha Biyadi Lo Matzitz Amart. So to which Abaye says back to Rava Bar Shasham, no. You could not have made the argument that I purchased the land. Why? Da'ika Allah Kala Da'ara Di'asmehi. Because while you were occupying the land, rumors started circulating. And remember, in order to have a kinyan cheskas gimel shanim, you need three things. We've been saying this time and again. Let's keep drilling it in. You need a taina, a legitimate claim that you own the land. You need to be there for 3 years unchallenged. And I gave away the third thing. It has to be unchallenged. The fact that there were rumors that were circulating that this was the orphan's property, that is tantamount to a challenge. That's like an ear-or. And if that is now considered a challenge, so now the only way you're going to be proving ownership of the land is only if you have actual documentation. To Abaye now is saying to Rava Bar Sharshom, you see, now that there were rumors and now that the land is considered, you are considered occupied with a challenge, so therefore you no longer have the legal right to just simply say, hey, I've been here 3 years, therefore the land is mine. Ella, Zilla Hadrini Alaya. So what you're going to have to do now is as follows. Look, the term of your secure loan is up. You got to give the land back to the estate. As far as your second loan that was unsecured, so you're going to have to wait. And v'chigad liyasme, and when the kids grow up, ishtaydina behadayu, you'll take them to court. You'll treat them in the regular legal manner that you're going to have to. And yes, you're going to have to make a shvua later on. I know you wanted to avoid it, but it's unavoidable. Okay.
Why are you going to avoid it if he's telling the truth?
Huh?
Why does he want to avoid it?
Excellent question. So let's take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam Amar Leh. Abaye, this is Abaye's response to Rav Bar Shasham. Had the chashav to bedachtech the ibeina ta'anina lekuche biyada kevin diyada milsa de bemashkenata isnachabe lo matzis lemitan lekuche biyadi. You cannot claim that you bought the land. Da'ika kala ve'edus ta'ara diyasmehi. Because of the rumors that circulated that the land belonged to the children. Da'ashta shlimu shtem ashkenasa ve'kevin diyada tis kela ailach da'ara da'ab mashkenata higabach ve'lo lekucha ein lecha macha gedola mizu. This is a challenge. You don't get a bigger challenge than this. When people start saying, hey, that's not your land. That belongs to the orphans. So even though the orphans were not the one who generated the challenge, it's nevertheless considered a challenge. So So, and the Rashbam says, and under those circumstances now, you're just basically going to have to return the land back to the kids, back to the estate, and at a later point in time, you want to collect your unsecured loan at a later point in time, you're going to have to wait. Now, here we get to the next part of the Rashbam. It's interesting. How long is he going to have to wait? Now, it's funny. If you would have asked me the question before the Rashbam, I would have given you, at least according to the Rashbam, the wrong answer. V'chi gad liyasmei shehu b'nei me'avid mitzvah. So, and now you're going to have to wait till the orphans to grow up in order for you to collect your unsecured loan. You're going to have to wait till the bar mitzvah. Now, it's funny. I would have said 20. Mm-hmm. And the Rashbam knows I would have said 20. I mean, the Rashbam doesn't know me, but he knows I would have said 20. And you'll see how he knows I would have said that, because he suggests it and he rejects it. Once the orphans of the estate, now by the way, just as a curiosity, do we have to wait till every orphan turns 13? Is it the first orphan that turns 13? I happen not to know the answer to that question, but 13 is the magic number. Now, 13, you're a man. Right? We all know that. But what I thought, however, is that when it comes to financial matters, I thought that the kids are expected to wait till they're 20 years of age. The Rashbam says, no, it's 13. And then once the kids arrive at 13 years of age, now you're going to go to take them to court, and you'll make a shvua, and then you'll collect. The Gemara in Erechim tells us that you simply freeze assets of the estate as long as the children are minors. And nothing, no monies are paid off. The only situation in which we are going to have the trustees of the estate pay is only if it's going to be an interest-bearing loan where the interest is just eating away. And if we allow time to pass, so the interest is just going to keep growing and growing. Under those circumstances, so then the money of the estates are going to be paid to satisfy a loan. Otherwise, and obviously the lender under those circumstances is a non-Jew, but otherwise all the assets are frozen. Now, the imam are to know knows them hilchach mamtina le'adigadle. You wait until they grow up. Dehainu b'ben yud yamoshanim ve'elach idemuchachasam. And the Gemara over there says 13 years of age. The hadamim beperek mishemais. Now we are going to say later on in the Gemara in Baba Basra limkor benichse aviv ashiu ben chaf, that in terms of selling their father's property, you have to wait until 20 years of age. That's why I thought the number was 20 based on the Gemara later in Baba Basra. Hani milish shemochel etzarachot saso. That is in terms of expenses of the orphans, so you should wait until they're 20 years of age. But to pay off dad's debt, based in Mochrim ben Yud Gimel Ve'elech. So that based in will have them selling off assets of the estate after they turn 13 years of age. Okay. Yeah.
Where do we get the source for challenging the land because of a ruling? Anybody can start a rumor now.
Agreed. I understood. That's again, when Rava Bar Sharsham went into the case, he thought also that the rumor does not have any legal significance. But what the idea over here is that the challenge is basically an alert to the occupier, to the squatter, that look, you think that you are. That you don't need to hold your document after 3 years, even if it's just a rumor that's circulating that's saying that you're not the owner of the land, it basically forces you to hold your documentation longer. That's the basic idea. But like I said yesterday, generally rumors halacha have no legal significance. But over here, however, again, a lot of this is umdana. A lot of this is just basically evaluation and how people normally behave. So what we should expect a person to behave is that if he knows that people are challenging, and even if the challenge is coming via rumor, he needs to hold on his documentation longer.
The orphans are that to request from file any claims against this guy? Or the loan?
Which one? The secured loan? The unsecured loan?
Unsecured loan. Did you get the loan?
So right, but you can only, but even still, in other words, but you can only collect after you made a shvuah. That's the rule of operation when you're collecting it from the estate. You have to make a shvuah, and he wanted to avoid that. Okay. Okay. Let's go on. Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, right in the middle of the Amud. Next scenario. Kreva the Ravidi Baravin Shach Veshavik Dikla. So the relative Ravidi Baravin. Okay, you got, he's very popular today. So the relatives of Ravidi Baravin died, and the and Shachiv and Veshavik Dikla, and they left a palm tree. Okay, Ravidi Baravin Amar Ana Kreiv Tzvei. So Ravidi Baravin's looking around. You know, it's Not a super distant relative, but obviously we're not talking about a father. At least I don't think so. In other words, we're talking about some sort of maybe an uncle, a cousin, and he's looking around and he thinks right now he's the closest relative. And not only does he think it, but he claims it. I'm the closest relative, therefore I'm the one who's going to inherit it. And along comes a guy, and the Gemara doesn't tell us what his name is, but he makes a claim, no, I'm the closest relative. I don't remember him from last Pesach. He never came to Seder. I don't know who he is. But okay, he's making a claim. And tomorrow's daf, we're going to learn the rule of Kol Da'alim Gvar. Meaning, you have a claim, somebody else has a claim. Nobody has evidence. Nobody's bringing proof. So what's the general rule of conflict resolution when we have no evidence? Fight it out. Like, in other words, what can we as Beis Din do? We don't know. We don't know who's telling the truth. We don't know who's right. So fight it out, gentlemen. So Kol Da'alim Gvar. Obviously, it's not the best form of conflict resolution. In other words, we don't want to promote that kind of that kind of behavior. But in other words, what really can you expect Beis Din to do under those circumstances? Okay, so. And as the Rashi point out, by the way, this nondescript relative who, from Ravidi Baravin's standpoint, doesn't know what he's talking about, but he made the claim and he was stronger. So now, for the next couple of years, Rashbam says 1 or 2 years, so he basically now he's been sitting on this land with the palm tree. And then after 2 years go by, and you'll see why specifically two, not three. So after 2 years go by, finally, this nondescript relative finally gets a conscience, and he goes over to Ravidi Baravin and says, you know what? Okay, hands up in the air, I'm guilty, I'm not a close relative, and I just, if I can add a little more drama, I'm not even related. But he doesn't say that. But he finally concedes to Ravidi Baravin, you're the closer relative. Ukma Rechista Biyadeh. So Rechista says, okay, now I know what to do. Meaning, the guy admitted that he's not a close relative, so he took the palm tree and he now hands it over to Ravidi Baravin, who is in fact now the legitimate closest relative. But Ravidi Baravin says, but I don't think this is over. Because he says, for the last 2 years now, he's been sitting on my property with my palm tree, he's been eating my dates. I need reimbursement. So lehadali peradacha me'al yomad ashta. So from the point where I claimed that the land belonged to me, now for the last year or 2 years, he's been eating my dates. So I want a reimbursement. I'm sorry. And Rav Chista, in fact, awarded him the reimbursement for the last 2 years. Amar, Zehu Sha'omim Alav, I'm sorry, Rav Idi Baravin was demanding the dates get reimbursed. Amar Zehu Sha'omim Alav Adam Gadohu. And Rav Chista said, regarding Rav Idi Baravin, you know, I heard great things about you. But quite frankly, it seems to be that your reputation is slightly hyperinflated. Because I don't know, you want now a reimbursement as well, meaning you want a palm tree and a reimbursement. Aman kansamich mar ahai. So now, on what grounds is it that you're demanding a reimbursement? Based on what he's saying. Well, remember, 2 years ago, it was the same person who said that the land belongs to him. So, in other words, you can't really trust him. 2 years ago, he said the land belonged to him, and as a result of that, he got the land. Now he's saying, no, the land belongs to you. But your entire grounds of your contention is based on what he says. At this point in time, you can't trust him. Mar ahai, I'm sorry, aman kansamich mar ahai, ha ka'amar danim akravin etvei. He was the one who said 2 years ago that he was a close relative. So Rav Chista said, basically, whatever he says, I'm not taking into consideration. So basically, here's the story. 2 years ago, I awarded the land to him. Or again, I didn't really award the land to him. 2 years ago, when he said that he was a close relative, so basically I said, call the Olam Gavar. You guys fight it out. He won the fight. Now, 2 years ago, I'm going to use the words very carefully. Giving the land over to you. So you know what we're going to call that? We'll call that a gift. You can't now at this point in time say, hey, I want a reimbursement of the last 2 years. Come on. He got the land 2 years ago. He's giving you the land now. When somebody gives you a gift, you can't say, oh, and do me a favor. I also want retroactive to the gift, or you know, the 2 years prior to the gift, any fruit that the tree produced. He can't do that. So basically, Rav Chisda says to Rav Edi Bar Avin, you have no right to claim any kind of reimbursement for the fruit from the past 2 years. Now, as far as this argument of Rav Chisda was concerned, and parenthetically, by the way, he was also a little dismissive of Rav Edi Bar Avin. So Abai and Rava says, you know what? We don't agree with Rav Chisda. In that, came into Odi. Look, the guy made an admission. He said he's no longer the close relative. Once he made the admission, take a look at the top Rashbam, Malami Gemal Medbeis, or the second Rashbam. Once he admitted that he's no longer has any rights of the land, so that's an admission, and the Rashbam writes, V'yishalem perisha achal v'chein alacha. Therefore, he does have to make a reimbursement of the last 2 years, considering the fact that he just admitted that he really had no rights to the land. And therefore, he has been illegally been occupying the land for the last 2 years. And therefore, a full reimbursement should be made. And the Rashbam points out, by the way, that in fact is the halacha, meaning not like Rav Chisda. Okay. The Rashbam, by the way, has another girsa of the Gemara, another pshat in the Gemara, but what we just said over is the preferred pshat of the Rashbam. We're going to continue in the Gemara. We're on the very top now of Lama Gimel Medbeis, Zermar Shalavosi, Vizeh Amar Shalavosi. So we have two litigants coming into court, and each one claiming that it belongs to their father. Hai Isisade Davosihu, Vahai Isisade Dachoshne Chazaka. Okay, this sounds very familiar. We did a very similar case in the Daf 2 days ago, in Daf Lamed Aleph. Now, each one of them brings witnesses, but one brings witnesses that it actually belongs to his father, and the other brings witnesses that he's been there for the last 3 years. So Amar Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda says, Malu l'shaker, Ibai Amalei minach zivanti v'achalta shnei chazaka. So Rav Chisda says, look, he really had no reason to lie, meaning the occupier. Because what he could have said was, minach zivanti. Well, I bought it from you, and I've been here for the last 3 years, meaning that could have been his taina. Now, if he would have made that taina, that would have been perfect, meaning because then you have the recipe of Cheskes Gimel Shanim. You have a good claim, you bought it, you have been there for 3 years, and he's gone unchallenged. The problem was is that when he came into court, that's not what he said. When he came into court, he said, this land belonged to my father. So now remember, when we talked about this case 2 days ago, we talked about whether or not you can modify your claim in court, meaning even though that was your original claim, can you come back later at a later point in time and modify? And if you remember, we said a couple days ago that if you went outside of court and you went back in, like there's no room for any kind of modification whatsoever, somebody outside counseled you and told you, hey, what you said was no good, why don't you say something better? But, under these circumstances, however, we're not talking about any modification. We're just simply saying that he said it belonged to his father, and now we're looking at what he could have said, and basically, once again, we come onto the discussion of Migu. So, Abai v'Rava lo svir lohu had Rav Chisda, and again, Abai and Rava just simply reject this ruling of Rav Chisda. Mal l'shaker b'makom edin lo amrinan. Well, what? No. You can't say Migu in this case over here because, once again, his claim going into court is, it belonged to my father. Well, we patently know it's not true because witnesses that were brought by the other litigant have stated and validated that the land belonged not to the first litigant's father, but rather the other litigant's father, their litigant's father. So what they're saying is, so what he's saying, that it belongs to my father, is going against Edom. And as we've said now a number of times, and the Gemara is saying here again, you cannot give somebody the credibility of Migu when it goes against that which Edom are saying. Meaning Migu, again, the easiest way to understand Migu is that basically it enhances your credibility. Now, it may enhance your credibility, but it's not going to be able to go against witnesses. Witnesses is a much greater source of credibility than your quote-unquote enhanced credibility through Migu.
What are the Edom saying? Saying that the land belongs
to their litigant's father.
So based on what? Based on what they saw?
Whatever it's based on, they're two witnesses.
How do they know that?
How do they know that?
How do they know they didn't sell it at some time? They haven't been with the father.
Correct. But in other words, the other litigant is not saying I bought it from his father. The other litigant is saying it belonged to my father. So his claim is going against that which the witnesses are saying. Now again, if he came in with a modification, this is what we talked about 2 days ago. If he came in with a modification and said something like, or even if it wasn't, even if he originally said, look, I know the land belonged to your guy's father, but I bought it from your father, or my father bought it from your father. That's good. That'd be a good claim. Again, a taina has to be a reasonable claim. Over here, it's not reasonable because what he's claiming is going against what they said. They said it belonged to the other litigant's father. Okay. Another case, our last case for today. A person said that what are you doing on my land? Most of our cases that we've been dealing with since the beginning of Cheskel Shabbatim have started with this intro. What are you doing on my land? Amalei minach zavane v'achalte shnei chazaka. So he says, I bought it from you and I've been here for the last 3 years. So he has a taina, an explanation as to how he got here, and he's been here for the last 3 years. So, now, what he was able to do was bring witnesses. Now, again, to say that you have been on the land for 3 years is not enough. You need witnesses that you've been on the land for the last 3 years. And he brought witnesses, but the witnesses came short for him. They didn't come through for him. And you can't blame the witnesses. In other words, they're only testifying what they know. And what they know is that he's been on the land for the last 2 years, not three. That's 1 year too short. So Amar Rav Nachman, Hadra Arav Adra Pere. Now this statement of Rav Nachman we've seen already earlier, but this is the first time we're seeing it in the Gemara itself. That's not true. The Gemara said it earlier, but incidentally. This is the case in which Rav Nachman ruled. Rav Nachman said, okay, so you've now no longer been able to establish ownership because you have not been on the land for 3 years. The witnesses said you've only been on the land for 2 years. So, and you don't have documentation. So now give the land back. And furthermore, says Rav Nachman, not only do you have to give the land back, but you got to make a reimbursement on the fruit as well. You have not been the owner. You have been only a squatter with no legal right to the land. So you're going to give the land back and you're going to also make a reimbursement to the fruit as well. Amar Rav Zvid. So Rav Zvid said, fine. Everything up until this point in fine, this point in time, fine. But imtan v'amar leperes yiradati neman. So Rav Zvid says that if he comes along and he makes the claim and he says, look, I'm not claiming I own the land. Meaning, you're right, the land does not belong to me. But I came here for the fruit. So if he says I came here for the fruit, so then he's going to be believed. Now, as the Rashbam himself points out, take a look towards the bottom of the Amud. The Rashbam is, as the lines are from end to end on the page, it's about 7 lines down from there. Divra Maskal Amar Zvid. The Rashbam writes, Milsa Bapi Nafshehi, Bahachi Kamar. This point of Razvid really is independent to what we just got done saying. Meaning what we just got done saying is that if his claim was to the land and he couldn't back it up with witnesses, so then he loses everything. The land and the fruit that he ate for the last 2 years. Fine. This is a new point, says the Rashbam, and that is, if his claim was had nothing to do with the land itself, but just simply the fruit. V'hachi kamar, and I'm reading the Rashbam. If the owner is saying to him, what are you doing here? So ilu lo heishiv lo minach zvanta ela leperes yiradati kedin aris lemechzel shish lo revia oshemachat leperes ad eser shanim. And his claim is either I'm a sharecropper or you leased me the land for the last 10 years. Another way of saying I'm a sharecropper. So Naaman, under those circumstances, is going to be believed. And again, I'm reading the Rashbam. Bamash achal lemafreya uveshuvu says the zavni minei. In other words, obviously not from this point going forward, because from this point going forward, obviously the owner of the land is basically saying, you don't belong here. But on all past fruit that he ate, so he gets to keep. Now the Rashbam does add, but he has to make a Shavuos Hesed, because basically what do I have? I have a claim and a denial. Meaning the owner of the land is saying, I don't know what you're doing here. And he's saying, what do you mean? You sold me the rights to the land. Or you allow me to sharecrop over these last years. So he is going to have to make a Shavuos Hesed. Now the Gemara is going to say this, but I'm reading it in the Rashbam, and that is, look, we have general parameters of how chutzpahdik people could be. And now I know recently we've been testing those parameters, but we have a general threshold of people are not that chutzpahdik. Nobody's going to go into somebody else's land, and as the Gemara later on in a moment is about to describe, you know, with tools and with ropes and with sickles, and you're not going to go into the land if you have no business being there. That's a general assumption that we make. And therefore, when you make the claim that, what do you mean? I'm a sharecropper. So at least for the past fruit that you already consumed, so that is going to be a credible claim.
What about the portion that you actually give to the landowner as part of the
sharecropper? I guess, hey, right. It's a fair question. I'm not so sure about that, but... That's the basic idea. Miu, I'm just finishing up this Rashbam. But in other words, obviously now from here going forward, where the owner of the land is saying basically, I don't think you have a business being here, and he's saying, oh no, yes I do. So from this point going forward, obviously we're at an impasse, and only with documentation and only with witnesses can we go forward over here in this kind of relationship. Meaning, because otherwise it will be chaotic. I'll just go onto somebody's property and I'll just simply say, oh, I belong here. Okay, so... Right, without checks and balances, without the fear of somebody actually having some sort of oversight on you, so people will do what they want to do. So obviously from this point going forward, you can't just simply make the claim. This claim, says the Rashbam, only works for past fruit that were consumed. Back to the Gemara. So, Amar Zvid, I'm going to go back to the statement of Rav Zvid. We'll finish up today with his statement. Amar Zvid, Imtan V'Amar L'Peres Yerati Neman. So, if he says that, I went not to own the land, but I went just simply for the fruit, he's going to be believed. Lav Mi'Amar Rav Yehuda. And in support of Rav Zvid, the Gemara quotes the statement of Rav Yehuda. Ha'iman Danake Magla V'Tovila. V'Tovila. If a person has a sickle and rope in his hand, and the Rashbam explains that the sickle is to cut, the rope is to climb the tree. And he says, you know what I'm doing here? He sold me the rights to the fruit. Meaning, I'm not an owner of the land, but I bought the rights to the fruit, so he's going to be believed. Lo chatzif inish de gazer dikla de lav delay. And we have a general assumption that no one will be that chutzpahdik. They're just going to walk onto somebody's land and just simply start cutting down fruit when it does not belong to him. Hachinami lo chatzif inish lemechaper de lav delay. Here also by Rav Zvid, we're just going to make that assumption. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, well, shouldn't we say basically the same thing regarding land as well? A person wouldn't be that chutzpahdik? The Gemara says, no. No, because when it comes to land, remember that in order to be the proud owner of a land, you need documentation. So the Gemara says, well, aren't we going to say the same thing regarding fruit? The Gemara says, not necessarily. People don't write up documentation for fruit. In other words, fruit, in terms of the buying and selling of the rights of fruit, so that could be done with a handshake, that could be done with money, but you don't necessarily have documentation. Well, that's not true regarding land. That's a basic distinction to be made, and therefore, if you make a claim, hey, the land belongs to me, no, you need proof. Proof in the form of documentation or witnesses that you've been here unchallenged for the last 3 years. When it comes to fruit, documentation is necessary. And if you just simply walk onto somebody's property and start eating their fruit, and the guy says, what are you doing here? And you make the claim, what do you mean? I bought it, so for anything in the past, you're going to be believed, you're going to be credible. From this point going forward, obviously, that's a different story, but at least for the past, you have that kind of credibility. Okay, Ad Kan, we'll stop over here tomorrow. We get onto the basic topic of Kol Da'alim Gvar. We covered it just a little bit today. Tomorrow, big daf in terms of Kol Da'alim Gvar. So let's just quickly recap. We talked about going into court with a document that is either a forged document or a recycled document. And what do we do under those circumstances? So Rav Idi Bar Avin said, really at the end of yesterday's daf, it's where we started today, that under those circumstances, I don't know. Meaning Machlokas Rabban and Rav Yosef, Migu, Nam Migu. So therefore, we basically operate with the rules of Chazaka when it comes to money. Who's ever holding on to the money gets to keep the money. And then over the course of today, we discussed the case of Rava Bar Sharsham, where he's eating the produce of the Yesomim. With more details, it was discovered that there was a secured and unsecured loan, and he was basically trying to collect his unsecured loan without having to make a shvua, and the ruling came down that no, you're going to have to give back the pledged land because that secure loan was up, and as far as the unsecured loan is concerned, wait till they grow up and then take him to court. And what the Rashbam says very strongly over here is that 13 years of age is when they're going to have to start handling their father's account payable. And they're going to have to pay off all the outstanding debt of their father. And then the next case that we dealt with is the Krav of the Rav Idi Bar Avin, the relative of Rav Idi Bar Avin who died, and there was a contestation of who is the close relative, and the guy, some guy said he was a close relative. We applied the principle of Kol Da'alim Gavar. He had finally admitted after 2 years he was not, and then a question of whether or not Rav Idi Bar Avin was entitled to reimbursement of the fruit for the last 2 years, and the Gemara's conclusion, at least Rashbam's conclusion, is he is entitled to a reimbursement considering that the other guy admitted that he was a liar. The second to last case that we dealt with is two people are contesting that the land belongs to their fathers, and one was able to bring witnesses to that case, the other one was not, but he was there for the last 3 years, so can't he make an argument of, well, I could have said? And the Gemara says, no, not against Edom. Migo against Edom, he can't say. And the last case that we dealt with is where the person said, I was here for the last 3 years, but he was only able to bring witnesses for the last 2 years. So Rav Nachman's ruling was, you got to give back the land, and you also got to give back the fruit of the last 2 years as well. In other words, if you cannot make claim to the land, so obviously you have to reimburse the fruit as well. And then, just that last point is that if your original claim was on the fruit, so then you're going to be believed, because we have general principles of how chutzpahdik people are.